This is KJZZ, your member-supported news and information station. I'm Catherine Fritke, and these are the stories you don't want to miss. For the week of February 20th, here are some top stories. Earlier this month, the U.S. Department of Agriculture completely scrubbed thousands of animal welfare documents from its website after an outcry from advocates and questions from lawmakers. Some, but not all, of the documents have been reposted. As KJZZ's Casey Kuhn reports, one Arizona man says the fight isn't over to protect public information.
In Russ Kick's apartment tucked away in Tucson, piles of paper sit on the floor next to his three-year-old laptop.
Pretty high-priority stuff that I need to get to soon. It's right there waiting for me.
The papers hold public information and documents. They're waiting in line to be scanned, labeled, and uploaded onto Kick's online archive. It's called Memory Hole 2, so named as a second iteration born from his mistrust of authority and obsession for collecting data.
All those things kind of came together with this idea that, you know, I need to start a website where I post these important government documents that for some reason or another just are not easily available.
His most recent effort shines a spotlight on animal welfare documents produced by USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS.
I was very surprised to see like these detailed reports because it is such a touchy topic.
Early February, APHIS took down all online published animal welfare documents, including any violation and enforcement reports.
Those were naming names of various facilities, whether, you know, they're animal labs or roadside zoos or big amusement parks. You know, you had like the detailed reports about what was going on there.
USDA said in multiple statements the takedown was a response to an ongoing lawsuit about personal information on those documents and that the decisions were not final. Animal advocates were outraged, like the Arizona Animal Welfare League in Phoenix. Michael Moorfield with the League shows me about a dozen Yorkshire Terriers just rescued from a puppy mill and rehabbing in the kennels. He says those records helped them save puppy mill dogs.
Some of them have had no heat or air in their buildings, so the dogs are on the brink of death. These violations are really important to see because it helps us educate the population.
The records are still available through Freedom of Information Act requests, where you can write and ask for documents directly from the agency. But that takes time and money. Moorfield says when the documents were so easily accessible, those resources would instead go directly to caring for the dogs. He says the reports helped consumers buying a puppy from a pet store. Without those available violation documents, even if you have a breeder's name and information, you cannot look them up.
That transparency is gone, and you cannot prove any violations to these pet stores.
A few weeks after the takedown, APHIS reposted a first batch of federal research facility inspection and annual lab reports. Those are a fraction of the original documents and do not include breeders or kennels. Members of Congress, including several Arizona representatives, sent a letter to the president urging the agency to restore the entire online database. And government transparency watchdogs agree.
It is an overreach. It is an overreaction.
Alex Howard is a director at the Sunlight Foundation, a Washington, D.C.-based transparency advocacy group. He says the USDA's reasoning based on litigation should have resulted in a more narrow response. And the timing was right as agency leaders changed.
I think it is a government agency insulating itself against some legal liability under a new administration.
Back in Tucson, Russ Kick was expecting to be saving and republishing government documents under whichever new administration took power.
Every administration likes to hide things, and I mean, they all do. But yeah, some are worse than others.
He wonders what else is out there.
What else got overlooked? Because I did back up, the FDA has a bunch of adverse events for like vaccines, pharmaceuticals. And again, they name names, they name the brands. Those seem like those are likely to go away.
As the USDA continues the trickle of reposting animal welfare documents, Kick is gearing up to publish any public data he can get his hands on in case that disappears too. Casey Kuhn, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
Intelligence cooperation between Mexico and the United States has become closer in the last decade on issues important to both countries: illegal immigration, border security, drugs, and human trafficking. But that critical intelligence relationship may be under examination in Mexico. The country is trying to fashion a response to economic threats issued by the new U.S. administration, and security is one serious chip to play. From the Fronteras Desk, Lauren Madelon reports for KJZZ.
This audio is the sound of Mexican Marines breaking into a compound and capturing Chapo Guzman last year. Guzman's the alleged drug trafficker and killer, extradited to the U.S. just last month. After Guzman was taken in, the DEA released a statement. The arrest is a significant achievement, they said, in our shared fight against organized crime. There are published reports that U.S. intelligence on Guzman's whereabouts led to the takedown. But will this kind of intelligence sharing continue?
There will be no incentives to collaborate with the United States.
No incentives to collaborate. That's Guillermo Valdez. He led Mexico's National Intelligence Agency between 2007 and 11. During his time in office and afterwards, intelligence collaboration deepened. Agents from both countries now work together on Mexico's southern border with Guatemala to stop U.S.-bound migrants. The DEA is active inside Mexico, and the U.S. Border Patrol is training Mexican border police inside the country. But Valdez says that relationship may fray some if a suite of economic threats against Mexico are carried out by the U.S.
If Mexico decides to slow the cooperation in security issues, the United States will be hurt.
Mexico's new foreign secretary, Luis Videgaray, recently told a television host that his country will only bend so far. He said Mexico won't play ball on U.S. requests if it's threatened.
Mexico está dispuesto a decir que no cuando el orgullo nacional, la dignidad nacional, se ven amenazadas.
Mexico's willing to say no when national pride and dignity are threatened, he said. Guillermo Valdez says Mexico should consider expelling DEA agents should the U.S. impose a border tax on Mexican goods or expand the border wall.
The belief that they can make a safe border with a wall, that's a false idea. That's not true, and they know.
Then Valdez says, put yourself in the shoes of a Mexican agent.
If I see that U.S. government now is attacking Mexico, I will not be enthusiastic about doing a good job to stop, for example, drugs going to the United States.
Valdez worked with American agents after Mexico's previous president, Felipe Calderón, went to war against Mexican drug cartels in 2006, a strategy backed by the U.S. A decade later, Valdez believes Mexico can withdraw support on any number of security fronts.
Or the stop of destroying plantations of amapola.
That's the poppy seed that makes heroin.
Poppy seed, yes. Or stopping collaboration with the DEA agents in exchange of information about drug traffickers.
One of the people Valdez worked closely with is the former deputy director of the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, David Shedd.
I think the effects will be seen very quickly.
Shedd told me that when the U.S. deports someone to Mexico, the U.S. needs Mexican confirmation of that person's identity. Shedd isn't so sure Mexico will continue to furnish that information.
They may just sit on it or may not pursue it. These are very fluid and ongoing conversations that go on every day and every hour of the day between our two countries.
Which Shedd says took a decade to get going.
And I just wouldn't want to see that decreased as a result of a tone that really puts the Mexicans on edge.
Again, Guillermo Valdez.
It's better to cooperate and not to fight.
He says Mexico isn't just looking for criminal kingpins. His colleagues are also working to stop migrants from what Mexico calls restricted nationalities, places where terrorism is prevalent.
People who come from countries with the presence of Al-Qaeda or ISIS.
That cooperation could come to an end, he says. But he's hopeful that a security relationship that's taken decades to build won't be weakened, despite the words of a new American administration. Lauren Madelon, KJZZ News.
You're listening to the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Let's give a listen to this from our original program, The Show.
Last spring, a few Tempe residents decided Papago Park needed to be cleaned up badly. Photos show large piles of trash alongside the trails that crisscross the park, as well as items like mattresses and plastic bins.
But a cleanup wasn't enough because the trash was mostly brought in by people setting up encampments in the park, so it kept reappearing, regenerating. The show's Annika Klein tells us how conditions at Papago spurred a plan to tackle homelessness citywide.
Right on the heels of the new year, the group Friends of Papago Park lead people on a walk through their namesake. Planes trace a path in the sky overhead, while the paths on the ground snake through bushes, rocks, and sometimes man-made items. It's something Garrett Mack has seen since last May.
There was a huge spike in trash, and from that point it seemed to just exponentially get worse every week.
Mack is part of a biking group that rides through here. He says they tried to clean up what they could, but realized a spike in urban camping was the main cause.
I've seen some camps out here that have been good about being clean, and some camps that don't care. And when they stop caring and they make trash, you know, my problem, that's when, you know, I want to take action.
So he did. He and some friends got the city of Tempe to take a look at the portion of Papago Park within their city limits. Councilman Colby Granville is along for the walk today.
There were huge piles of trash that we needed to take care of immediately from a health and safety standpoint.
The city has cleaned up 40 tons of debris since June at a cost of $35,000. But the idea of urban camping is not new to the city. Earlier in 2016, they heard a similar rallying cry to make a change coming from businesses along Mill Avenue.
There was a time a year ago where you could bring everything you owned, put it on the sidewalk on Mill Avenue, and sleep there 24/7.
Some downtown businesses complained, and the city council made it illegal to sit or lie on Mill Avenue sidewalks during certain times. Granville says he thinks the Mill ordinance and the uptick in camping here are related. A handful of other residents have joined on the walk, meant to highlight the areas still layered with water bottles, cardboard, even a shopping cart. But Linda Derringer doesn't seem as frustrated with the mess as with what it symbolizes.
It seems like it's not human to let people live in the wild, you know, in the bushes, and we should be helping them now that we know they're here.
The city of Tempe is determined to end homelessness.
Nikki Ripley with the city says that goal might sound idealistic, but it doesn't mean there will never be another homeless person in Tempe. It means there will be enough resources to deal with it when it does happen. And it means taking a different approach than just enforcement.
Homelessness is not a criminal activity. That's part of what we mean when we talk about approaching the issue with compassion.
The city dedicates more than $1 million of its annual budget to human services, but it set aside another $250,000 this year for a more targeted effort, which was presented to Tempe City Council last week. By July, the goal is to house 50 homeless people and provide services to 200 more. And for parkgoers?
There are identified dedicated cleanup dates that'll happen throughout 2017.
Garrett Mack has moved past the idea of a few cleanups and wants to see the city's plan succeed.
We can't fix the problem if we don't start with the solution, and that's getting people housing.
And if that happens, the issue of trash cleans up itself. For the show, I'm Annika Klein.
In business news, Phoenix City leaders have given the green light for a consultant to consider hockey at Talking Stick Resort Arena. The downtown venue, home to the Phoenix Suns basketball team, was actually the Arizona Coyotes' first stop when the team arrived in 1996. The Coyotes moved to Glendale in 2003. From the KJZZ Business Desk, Christina Estes reports on why one councilman wants to know what it would take to bring hockey back.
It was a short item, just a single paragraph on a 330-page agenda. It called for the council to approve $75,000 for the Barrett Sports Group to evaluate the downtown arena. There was no mention of hockey until Councilman Michael Nowakowski, who represents downtown, asked this.
I was just wondering if there's a possibility for them to actually look into, if we had a hockey team, what that would look like and what extra expenses would it take to have a hockey arena and a hockey team located there if we remodeled the arena and brought it up to date.
Councilman Jim Waring didn't like that idea. He said it would be a little like throwing Glendale under the bus. The Coyotes have been looking to leave Glendale since its city council voided a management deal with the team. Phoenix's mayor has promoted the idea of building an arena that the Coyotes and Suns could share. The Arizona Diamondbacks baseball team is suing Maricopa County to break its lease at Chase Field in downtown Phoenix. Christina Estes, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
NASA's announcement of planets outside our solar system that could be like Earth have scientists in Tucson excited about the possibilities for life. From the Arizona Science Desk, Sarah Hammond reports for KJZZ on reaction from the Planetary Science Institute.
NASA officials say they found seven Earth-sized planets orbiting a single star 40 light-years from Earth. Three of them could be in a region where a rocky planet is most likely to have liquid water, a key element for life. Planetary Science Institute astrobiologist David Grinspoon models the climates of planets that orbit a star other than our sun.
It's really an incredible discovery to learn of a relatively nearby system of planets where there are so many Earth-sized planets orbiting together, including several that seem to potentially be in the right zone of distance from the star, that they might have the climate conditions conducive to life. That's really exciting.
NASA scientists say the discovery will open the door for future study of the potentially habitable planets, including the makeup of their atmospheres. In Tucson, I'm Sarah Hammond.
This has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by Vitalist Health Foundation, the IEEE Foundation, the Arizona Community Foundation, the ASU Biodesign Institute, Alliance Bank of Arizona, Beach Fleischman, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to KJZZ and for your generous support. I'm Catherine Frickey, and this is KJZZ, your news and information source.